Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine abyss, and I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Well, hey, diddle diddle. The cat had a fiddle. And I don't know what the hell happened with the mouse, but somebody did something with a dog and it just went somewhere else. And then the zombies took over and all kinds of weird ass stuff just started happening. Tonight I have on the show a guest by the name of Grant Lanker. Hello, Grant. How's it going?
Hey, Will. How's it going? Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Glad to have you. And I think I'm talking a little loud because my gain seemed to be a little high.
Do you need me to get closer to my mic, or am I all right?
Oh, you're fine. I've got this set up so that what happens is it breaks it out into two channels, and then I edit later if I need to.
Oh, okay.
So all I have to do is turn mine down a little bit because I set it up on super high this morning.
Sounds
almost
good.
As if it was smoking something. So, I understand you're in Pittsburgh, which is the home of zombies.
It's the home of zombies. It's the home of quite a few other things. It's Jim Shooter is from Pittsburgh. A few comic book legends. It's where cartoonist Kayfabe, if you know that YouTube channel, that's where they're from. Yeah, Pittsburgh has a pretty good comic book history.
And horror.
And horror, right.
I've been there a couple times myself to a convention called Horror Realm that was, I think it's been going on for about 10, 15 years now. But the last couple of years have been hard to get out there.
Did you go to any of the spots where either Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead were filmed?
Yes. We ended up doing the one outtake to the cemetery, the Evan City Cemetery. So I got a picture of myself with the one headstone or whatever. And this is before they renovated and refixed the whole whatever the hell they call that little building out by the front.
I don't know how many years did you go? How many years back did you go there?
About 10 years ago.
Okay, so I know for a while they had a museum there. I don't know if you got the chance to go to that.
Did not get the chance to go to the museum. And you're talking in the mall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what? I follow them online a lot. The museum apparently was there for a while. Then it got taken down because of stuff. And I think they're coming back again now at some point.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie Martin?
The movie which?
The movie Martin. It's directed by what's his name? The guy who directed Night of the Living Dead.
Romero?
Romero. Why did I forget that? Yes, it's directed by him and it's filmed in Pittsburgh. That one's actually kind of cooler because there's a lot of scenes shot in Pittsburgh. A lot of it is shot in downtown Pittsburgh, and a lot of the stuff, let's see, that movie's probably close to 30 years old, but you can, a lot of the buildings haven't changed since it came out.
Oh, from 1977.
Right.
I have not seen that movie. It's now on the list.
It's a cool movie. What it is it, the idea is, it's about a teenager who's convinced that he's a vampire. And he kind of keeps it, he kind of keeps it like a gray area, whether or not he actually is a vampire or whether it's all in his head. I think you'll like it.
I probably will. I've only had the one opportunity to ever meet George, and that just happened to be at a convention here in Toronto, when he was like, there was nobody in his line. So I said, what the hell? I'll go over and talk to him for a few minutes.
That's neat. He had the big George Romero glasses.
He had the big-ass glasses on his face, yep. So I understand you have a comic book coming out. And by the way, you have a Kickstarter, which I recommended to one of my friends to go and contribute to, and apparently he did, and that was when you were at the halfway point. Now you're at the fully funded point. What the heck?
Yeah. I'm actually over the fully funded.
And you still have 20-plus days to go.
I know. It's a good feeling.
Yeah, I watch some people do their Kickstarters and I wonder, it's like, what the heck does it actually get you? Okay. And then I hear about some awesome ones. Like, I don't know if you follow Brian Polito.
Yeah.
I know Brian. Almost every single one of his, bam, and they sell out.
Isn't, yeah, I mean, he's probably made more money off of Kickstarter than any other human being on the planet, other than Keanu Reeves.
Sure, exactly. So one of the guys in the chat room is asking you about what is your comic book about, and what is it called?
I don't know why I'm pointing at the poster. You'll be seeing me. The name of the comic book is Beowulf. You should be able to find it on Kickstarter if you just type in Beowulf and look in the comic book section. It is a modernized version of the story that we all had to read in high school. Essentially, it's about a 13-year-old girl who discovers that her cat is the reincarnation of an 8th-century wizard when they both have simultaneous visions of a dragon waking after a 1,000-year nap. So it's Mooney's idea to go. It's Mooney's idea to go track down the reincarnation of the legendary warrior Beowulf. Unfortunately, he's a complete and total slacker who would rather be sitting around drinking and watching TV all day rather than going out and slaying dragons. So the comic book is a lot about them getting ready for him having the battle of his life.
And do we have a Grendel in there somewhere?
We do not. I will probably put Grendel in there at some point later.
Ah, okay.
I said if this comic book is successful, but I mean, at this point, I'd say that's pretty surefire.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is your first actual comic you're putting out, right?
So I've been in a few anthologies, but this is the first, I'm hoping to do bi-monthly comic book where, yeah, everything is by me, you know, it's not just me being in somebody else's anthology.
Right. And you're doing all the artwork, all the story, everything?
So I have a friend named Antonio Brandao who's helping me. He's doing the pencils. I'm doing the inks, colors, and letters. And, of course, I'm writing it.
Cool. Now, when you're planning out the design and whatever of this, are you creating arcs, or are you just creating the issue and then trying to figure it out as it goes?
So I have the first 6 issues written.
Excellent.
And that's one arc. I think I might need to do like a double-sized issue for issue 6, but I don't know. I'll figure that out when that gets closer.
Excellent.
I'm sorry?
Sorry, go ahead.
So we have the first 6 issues all planned out. I have ideas for what I want to do after that. The main thing that I want to do is, I figure since this story involves reincarnation, I can kind of tell stories from every period in history. We could do like science fiction Beowulf. We can do Old West Beowulf. We can do maybe like a Victorian era Beowulf.
Steampunk.
Right. We could do like a 1940s detective Beowulf. That's part of the reason why I was drawn to this idea. I feel like there's endless amounts of possibility.
Now, on the goofy side, seeing as how you just mentioned the science fiction Beowulf, have you ever seen the movie Beowulf with Christopher Lambert in it?
I haven't seen that one. I've seen the all CGI one.
That's with What's-Her-Face in it.
Right. I do know that the Christopher Lambert one exists.
It's like after Mortal Kombat, they tried to figure out what else can we put him in.
Yeah.
Oh, let's put him in one of these things. It's a post-apocalyptic thing with the monster that you never quite see until the very end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's an amusing movie. But it's obviously very low budget.
So how does the monster look in it?
It looks pretty bad. I mean, they probably saved all the money on the effects until the very, very, very end so that they could actually have a half-decent-looking monster. But you can still tell that, for the most part, I think it's a guy in a suit.
Oh, okay.
And the other amusing thing for it was the leading lady in the movie, whose name is escaping me right now, was the original Lara Croft Tomb Raider, before the movies, before they did movies, she was the woman that was identified as Lara Croft when they went and toured the game.
Right.
Oh, what the hell was her name? She started doing other stuff.
So she did like the, what do they call that? Like actually like modeled?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have to pull up her name. I will get her name while I'm talking.
I think I vaguely remember the woman that you're talking about.
Rona Mitra.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she's done a bunch of other stuff now since then. She's an actual actress and whatever. She tends to gravitate towards kind of goofy movies that involve a lot of action.
I was going to say, I think she was in one of the Underworld movies.
Oh my gosh. She was in The Strain and Supergirl, which I never watched.
I did not watch that either.
Yeah, there's probably a good reason. Yes, and she was in the Rise of the Lycans movie, whatever the hell it is.
Right.
So
yeah, I vaguely know who you're talking about.
Okay.
Well, so would you recommend the Christopher Lambert Beowulf movie?
I love Christopher Lambert as an actor. I think he's hilarious in most roles he does.
Okay.
But I think they tried to make him too serious in this movie.
Okay.
But it is a fun movie to watch. I mean, you should be able to find it on a number of different streaming platforms. I have it on DVD. I picked it up ages ago.
That sounds like a light recommend.
It's a medium recommend, yeah. It's a what we call an okay time waster.
Right.
But, so, time travel, time periods, Beowulf, reincarnation sounds like an awesome idea. Sounds very similar to some of the Spawns that have been coming out now for the last little while.
Right.
But it's definitely the kind of thing that's got a good spin to it from what I can see.
Obviously this is a lot less serious and dark and foreboding than the Spawn comic books.
Yes, let's have heaven and hell fighting each other.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's not my cup of tea, but I mean, he must be doing something right. I mean, they've been around for what, 30 years now, right?
They hit over 300 issues. I think we're at, 325 or whatever is this month's issue. I could look. Yeah. I have the boxes over there for stock for the store.
Yeah, that is impressive. But to me, even though he doesn't have as many, to me what Eric Larson did with Savage Dragon is even more impressive. Doing, that many comic books, writing, drawing, and inking. I mean, I think he's only at 260 or 270, but still.
Something like that, yeah. I think they hit 250 a couple months ago.
Okay.
I have that issue.
I mean, seeing how much work goes into putting it in one comic book, it drives me nuts because, it's so many hours, so many 12-hour days, and then it takes you 10 minutes to read the comic book.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who's doing his own comic, much like the way you're doing, where he's doing all of it himself. He's got a number of different artists involved, do covers and whatever else. He's only on issue 4, I think, is coming out. And it takes a long time to get those packaged and ready to go. And in the same way, he's doing it direct.
Right. I take forever, even just doing the lettering. I take forever, trying to get the oval perfectly, on the word balloons, trying to get the oval perfectly round and getting the little, the little stem that goes down towards the person's mouth. Oh God, I can waste an entire afternoon just drawing word balloons.
Yeah, I understand this. I'm like that in the writing. It's okay, got to have the right word here. What's the right word? Nope, that's not the right word. There are 30 different words to describe the whole concept of jumping over the moon. Yeah, no, I don't like that word. Let's get another word.
you can drive yourself nuts with any of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. This is why you got to have a mindset that says, I'm just going to do this.
Exactly.
So, I expect that you're... Do you have a number of comic book stores? There's a few in Pittsburgh, isn't there?
There's a lot of comic book stores in Pittsburgh. A lot of good ones, actually.
I've heard of... is Mile High Comics located in Pittsburgh?
I believe Mile High is in Denver.
Yeah. Okay. I can't remember because there's like so many comic shops in the US and up here in Canada, there's like, unless you're in a major metropolitan center, which there are only like a handful here, there's only a couple in each major metro. I think in Toronto, where we have like 5 million people here, there is, I can probably name off the top of my head about maybe 7. And Toronto is huge.
So did I hear you say correctly that you own a comic book store in there in Toronto?
I do, actually. It's in one of the suburbs of Toronto. It's on the weekends. It's in a flea market.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
But yeah, I have probably about 80,000 comics available for sale and a whole crap ton of other stuff.
You know, I mean, there are a lot of comic book stores in the United States, but I'll tell you this. The comic book stores in the United States that last more than a couple, more than like 3 or 4 years are pretty few and far between. I mean, you see it all the time.
It is a harder industry to be a part of now because more and more about the content is online and digital.
Right.
Because, well, look at Disney. Disney basically bought Marvel for one specific reason. They wanted the content. They wanted to be able to have a bunch of characters at their parks. And once they realized they could actually start turning money into making from movies and stuff, they've spread that out into the thing too.
Right. And it's funny that now, like, the comic books are kind of like the redheaded stepchild.
Much like horror has been for many, many decades.
Right. Well, I mean, that cracks me up that it's funny, like, as an independent comic book maker, you know, I of course think of Marvel and DC as being the big leagues. And I guarantee you there are people at Warner Brothers and Disney saying, why do we even bother making comic books anymore?
Have you heard about what's happened with Disney over the last 4 or 5 months?
Disney?
Sorry, Disney, DC.
Right, I was going to say DC, right. I know they cut the number of books in half. And there's been speculation that they're just going to start outsourcing comic books.
Well, let's put it this way. I can't even bring in DC books right now.
Really?
Because distribution, they changed the entire distribution process. And by the way, I'm a logistics person as a general rule. So what happens is DC went and severed their contract with the worldwide distributor of comics for pretty much every comic book shop in the world and decided they would take that on their own. So in the US, you can get DC comics because it's very cheap to ship from one corner of the US to another corner of the US. When you get outside of the US, it's an automatic $20 to $30 additional shipping charge just for one comic. Who's going to buy that?
Right. Yeah, I mean, so with Beowulf, I'm selling international via PDF.
Cool.
And I've had a couple people complain about that. And I said, maybe some point further down the line, I'll try to figure out international shipping. I'm very, very, very hesitant about it just because I've seen, you know, I've heard the horror stories about, oh, yeah, I had this really great Kickstarter. But I made one little mistake on international shipping.
Yep.
And now I'm $30 in the hole.
Where for one issue that costs $5 or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And then there's the other side of that. If you get into the Diamond Comics, which is the worldwide distributor for comics. They have a distribution site in Pittsburgh. It's a great way to get your book out there, but they have a lot of caveats, a lot of specific contractual obligations and everything in their system that if you don't meet those things, you can get so screwed.
I mean, I know going with Diamond is insane. I mean, at least from talking to other creators, it can be extremely difficult.
In the beginning, absolutely. I mean, I think one of their commitments is that you have to have a minimum commitment volume of 10,000 units, and you have to take 100% returns.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, in the beginning, that's a rough one. But once you're at the point to say, like, well, Brian Polito with Coffin Comics, where he sells 250,000 issues just on his Kickstarter or whatever. Yeah, that's okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's why Kickstarter has sprung up. And I mean, and so, okay, so that's interesting. So you're saying DC is now distributing their comic books themselves.
They picked up two partners. One of them was a major comic book shop in the U.S. I can't remember their names. And then the other one was through Penguin House, the book publisher. So they do trades and stuff through them. Neither of them are very out of America friendly. It's very difficult to deal with them.
Okay. So, see, I've been saying for years that Diamond needs competition. Like, I mean, I don't know how.
Absolutely.
They're not. I don't know how they're not butting up against anti-monopoly legislation.
It is a very interesting concept. Because up until, because when I started my shop, there was another distributor called Mars Distribution. They basically went belly up within about 6 years, did not do very well. They had not the ability to expand. And Diamond was very smart in how they've done things. It's just who's going to create that kind of infrastructure to be able to distribute that much product over across that much of an area. I mean, it'd be great if you had smaller distributors. But that's the thing. You need to have density in order to be able to be successful.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. So
but I agree. They need competition because otherwise there's no innovation. There's no redesign of everything. They're basically operating the same way they are as they have since the 80s.
Yeah. And I feel like we've been having this conversation for like the last 10-15 years and nothing's been done about it. Well, I guess DC is doing something about it, but this doesn't seem like it's
your comment earlier about, hey, why are we still making comics, is exactly the impression I've received and why they've decided to do this. They don't want to make print comics. They want to make digital content, and that's it. So my understanding from how they've gone on about what they're talking about with the different titles and everything else that they're going on with, is that they don't care about the actual comics production. They want people to create stories and characters and worlds and things or whatever that they can market through video, through online, and got nothing to do with print because they don't want to deal with that.
Right. Comic books are basically a testing ground for their TV and movies.
Right.
I mean, Image has been that for years. What's his name? Robert Kirkman. I mean, every comic book he does is just, hey, here's, I'm throwing this out there. Let's see if this would make a good TV show or not.
Yep. Yeah, the one with demons. What the hell was that one? Oh, crap. My memory is sucks. I'm an old guy. I forget things.
There was the one that actually got ended up getting made into a TV show, which I never watched. Which was kind of, it was kind of what The Walking Dead was doing for, Walking Dead was doing for Night of the Living Dead, but doing it for The Exorcist.
Yes, that's exactly the one I'm trying to remember the name of.
I can't remember the name either, but I don't think the TV show got very good reviews.
It did not. It only had the one season and then pretty much died. The comic book was not bad. I read the Outcast.
Outcast, right.
Yeah, that was actually not a bad comic. Probably like for 2 or 3, 4 or 5 arcs. And then it's like, you're really kind of just beating a dead horse here.
Yeah. I mean, I just find it frustrating. You know, you hear some of the founders of Image saying, you know, in interviews, treat comic books as if they're a testing ground for movies and TV shows. And it's kind of frustrating because, you know, that's not how I view comic books anyways.
Absolutely. I mean, I collect comics because I love comics. I love reading them. I love the artwork. It's like, if you can grab me with a quick hook or whatever, I'll probably stay with it and for whatever. I have runs that go on for hundreds of issues, and it's just, I enjoy them.
Yeah. And I mean, and the whole indie comic thing, it is really cool now because, I mean, really, it's one of the last few genres, or I guess mediums, where you can just throw out an idea out into the world and see if people react to it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a massive budget. Like, Beowulf was made on about a $1,500 budget.
Per issue or as an overall thing?
Per issue.
Cool.
You can't do that with movies or television.
Hell no.
So, I mean, that's what... I mean, obviously comic books are a hell of a lot of work, but you don't need that huge, massive investment up front that you do with movies and TV.
Or ongoing as well, because with movies and TVs, you need to keep a level of discussion going on about it afterwards, because otherwise it fades. I mean, if you look at any of the shows on Netflix or whatever right now, if there's not enough buzz going on for it for a while, they just kill it.
Right. Yeah, and it's, I mean, this is getting to be the problem now with every medium, but it's just like there's so much content being made that it's very easy to get lost and get out of the thick of things.
Absolutely. I would liken it quite a bit to the way horror has been treated. I mean, you've got your big budget slick horror. It's like, some of that's okay, but not necessarily always. But then you've got all of this soulful, great done version of great horror films that just, there's thousands of them, and they have the best bang for the buck as far as a return on an investment for making a product. And it's sometimes just a very simple story, and it's just a way that it turns.
Yeah, I mean, I would say horror is one of the few movies where it feels like the genre itself can almost be a selling point. Where, you know, people will say to themselves, oh, well, what scary movies are out now? And you know, they'll go to see a horror movie not really even necessarily knowing what it's about or anything, just knowing that it's a horror movie. And yeah, like you said, some of those horror movies are insanely cheap to make, and you know they make as much as a lot of the bigger budget movies. So,
well, Paranormal Activity, what, had a $20,000 budget for the first movie and made like over $62 million or whatever.
Right,
insane. And the movie itself is very simple, and right. It's like, I can see all the tricks that they use for doing it. It's like, okay, it's great that they did that, and I applaud them for being able to take an idea and making it something really appreciated worldwide. But the thing is, and this is Hollywood's biggest issue, this is my biggest issue with Hollywood, is that they do exactly what you just said. They will put out a product like, three more remakes of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's like, they'll just get people in there. It'll be a crap movie, but they'll get people in there because it's got a name.
You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day where they were talking about the old Friday the 13th movies.
That was the one I was trying to remember.
The reason why so many of them are like, this is the last Friday the 13th movie. No, this is the last Friday the 13th movie. No, seriously, this is the last Friday the 13th movie. The reason why they kept doing that was because they were making so much money off of them, but they were like embarrassed to be making them. So it was like, you know, we can't keep making these movies that everybody laughs at and everybody like says, oh, this is the death of cinema. This needs to be the last one. And then it would break the record for the most money made by a horror movie. And then they'd say, oh, God, we can't just say goodbye to all that money.
Yep. And that's Hollywood's big drinking fountain. If you look at the same idea, but you look at it from a foreign film, or you look at it in the indie market, they look at it, it's like, we just want to make a story. We don't care if it does exceptionally well. We just want to make it enough to make the worthwhile to doing this product, and we want to make some money. We don't need to make millions. Oh, wait, in Hollywood, we don't make any money on movies.
Yeah.
They have that special math.
So now, how do you feel about what's been kind of dubbed, like this new trend of what's been dubbed like elevated horror? If you know what I mean, like...
You mean sophisticated style horror?
I'm thinking about movies like Hereditary, The Witch, I guess Mandy would be thrown in there. Kind of
Mandy,
like
I loved The Witch.
I loved Mandy too.
The Witch was like, okay, it worked as a period piece, but as a horror, it didn't really do anything for me. And Hereditary, I've never actually watched it.
I think I just
Mandy was awesome.
Mandy was awesome. I don't even know if that's technically a horror movie. I mean, you could call it like more of like an action movie. But
it's a genre busting type one. It kind of flips between a couple of action, horror, what do you call it, LSD induced stuff. It's just neat.
Yeah, I liked how weird it was.
Like, it was like, is it really an LSD dream or are they really demons? You never can tell.
Yeah.
I love that about that movie. But
yeah,
I like intellectual horror as much as I like splatter.
Okay.
I'm that guy that if as long as you can entertain me and make me laugh at least once, I'll probably enjoy that movie. If you start trying to do weird things like in the ship Battleship, movie Battleship, where they try and do a Fast and Furious kind of Tokyo Drift with the battleship, I'm going to start really ripping it apart because the science on that is just wrong when they try to be serious. But you do a movie like Thanksgiving, where you have the bad guy as a rubber chicken going around killing people, that's funny just because they know they've got a $4,000 budget to do this movie and they're having fun with it.
So I remember enjoying it. I remember Thanksgiving and the gravy flavored condom.
I never saw a gravy flavored condom.
That wasn't in that movie?
I don't remember that being in there. I know there was a movie called Killer Condoms, but don't think there was a condom issue in Thanksgiving. I could be wrong. It has been a few years since I've seen it.
I might be thinking about another Thanksgiving horror themed movie, whatever.
There are a few of them.
Whatever, yeah.
But it's all cool. So yeah. Back more about your comic.
Okay. So I've been working with a gentleman by the name of Antonio Brandao, who's an established comic book artist. He's worked on a lot of different comic books. And basically, I think like a lot of people, I had a lot of extra free time due to the pandemic. I'm not gonna say that, you know, the pandemic has been, you know, beneficial or anything, because I've gotten in trouble for saying that in the past.
Some people have both sides on that. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm not saying that I'm happy that the pandemic happened, because I mean, obviously, people have lost their lives.
Yep.
But I do think that one of the good things is that it's given people time to you know, examine their lives. You know, I mean, I've worked in an office, you know, I've worked in a cubicle before. You know, some people enjoy it. From it, I've kind of come to the conclusion that it's not really for me.
Well, if you're an artist, it's definitely not the life for an artist.
Right. So yeah, I've worked as a graphic designer, both in, you know, corporate settings, and have done freelance. It wasn't the big, exciting, creative job that I thought it was going to be. I like doing this sort of thing a lot better, mainly because I'm, at the end of the day, I'm the boss. I get to say, you know, I mean, obviously I work with the artist Antonio, and he throws ideas out there, and a lot of times he throws out better ideas than I have. You know, as far as like the page layouts go and stuff, you know, I always start out with a page layout that I send to him, and then he starts, you know, tweaking it. And sometimes I say, I don't know, I think I liked it better when you know, the first panel was bigger. Other times I look at it and I say, you know what, your idea is better. So,
yeah, I totally understand where you come from. Like I said, my buddy Yuri has the same kind of relationship with a couple of other artists. He does that. He does the same thing.
And then I ink his pencils, which I don't know if technically speaking inkers are supposed to do this, but I do sometimes change the pencils a little bit. Sometimes if he gets the facial expression a little bit off, he's not always the best at panel to panel consistency. Like there's a scene in issue one where there's like a bottle of pills sitting next to the main character Beowulf's bed, and I think he drew that bottle of pills like a different shape like three different times. I'm not throwing him under the bus here. I think he would admit that he's not the best at panel to panel consistency, and I think part of that is he's got so much on his plate. Like he's doing like so many different projects at any given time. So,
right. Well, bottom line, it's your comic. You do it however you want, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm sure he probably understands and gets it. It's like, yeah. Okay. It's whatever. You do your thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just, so do you guys collaborate versus, in an online type thing where you're sharing information back and forth, or do you actually, here's the printed thing, I did all this, and then it goes to him, he does his thing on it, then you go back and forth.
So when I'm writing a comic book, I can't sit down and just write the script out. I have to be drawing it as I'm writing it out.
Okay.
Because I can't wrap my head around, why it is that some pages have five panels and they look way, way, way busier than pages that have like, you know, 11 panels. You know, that's never made sense to me. So I have to be drawing it out while I'm writing it. So basically, I said to Antonio when he first started doing this comic, look, I'm going to draw layouts for this comic book either way. You can look at them or you cannot look at them. And he said, hey, if it's going to make my job easier, sure, I'll take a look at your layouts first. So I draw out each page, and then I have like the dialogue like kind of in the like on the sides of the page.
Right, and, like footnotes.
Right. So I send him that, and sometimes I have to like explain certain things, you know, because I mean, I'm just doing like stick figures and stuff. But so that's the first way that we collaborate. And usually when he sends something back to me, it's at least like in the ballpark of what I sent him. I don't think he's ever done like just a radical like, you know, not even looked at my layouts and just like did like a totally radical.
You mean like page. You had a little lizard here and then he put Godzilla in?
Right. Okay. Yeah. I don't think he's ever done any radical changes like that.
Well, there is a question in the chat room saying, doesn't it make it hard for plot twists and stuff? And I was about to say, huh?
In what way?
That was kind of my question, is in what way? Cause I mean, if you're the design and creative person that is creating it, things that make you go back and say, wait. We'll wait to see if she clarifies your question, then come back to it.
Yeah.
So you're basically storyboarding out the story as you're writing it.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And that's cool. I mean, I think I've seen other comic book creators do similar ideas.
Yeah. I don't know how... I was a little bit nervous about, you know, saying to Antonio, you know, hey, I'm going to do layouts anyways. I wasn't sure if he would be offended by that or what, but he wasn't. And I don't know, I've done like pinups. The first issue is going to have a couple of pinups in the back.
Right.
And I've done that. So I've hired other artists to do pinups. And so far, nobody's been offended by, you know, me doing like thumbnails first.
Oh, so it gives them an idea as to what you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, because I've done freelance graphic design, I'm very sympathetic. I mean, there's nothing worse than, you know, clients who just don't tell you what they want, you know.
Or they ask you to do it for free.
Right. You laughed as if you've had experience with something similar.
I have many artist friends, and it's a similar complaint that I've heard, both sets of those things, where it's like, yeah, I want a huge, impactful thing that says that this is a really great product.
Yeah.
But what do you want it to say? How do you want it to be impactful? How what colors do you want? What are the things that you really want to make to say that? Oh, it's a car, so we want that to be, it's like, give it a story. Give right. it a perspective. Give it some depth. Artists can do whatever they want. They can make it whatever. But if you don't give them that direction, they'll come up with something 30 different ways, and none of them will be the one you want.
Yeah, I think art directing is a skill in and of itself. And yeah, I mean, if you're trying to do a logo, you know, for a construction company, and your client is the guy who spent his entire life working in construction, and he might know 30 different types of concrete to use, mm-hmm. but he knows nothing about art. That can be a big ordeal trying to get, you know, get any information, any type of articulation out of him whatsoever.
Right, because the person who's doing an actual job, like construction, as you're using as an example, is he probably knows how to do everything to build a thing.
Right.
But doesn't know how to tell a story.
Exactly.
And that's a lot of the art. I mean, the art is about how do you visually tell a story as well as adding some text.
Right.
I mean, we look at an average comic, 22 pages with an average of 5 to 10 panels or whatever per page. There's only so much story you can cram into it unless you can make it really impactful.
You're right.
So, I mean, I get it exactly what you're talking about. But the thing that I always giggle about is that a lot of artists, when they're at conventions as specialists, hey, can you just draw me up this thing or whatever like this? It's like, sure, it'll be $50. Well, can't you just do it for free for like posterity for a thing? And it's like, this is how you're making a living, man. It's like, no.
Yeah, so far I haven't been to the comic book conventions. I mean, obviously, they've all been canceled for a little while.
Yeah.
The last 10 or 11 months. I don't know. I don't know if dread is the right word for it. I don't know. It'll be cool to meet people. It'll be cool to get interesting thoughts and stuff. Stuff like that is not going to be as much fun.
For the first little while, and things will settle down again, and then it's like, okay, life will get back to what it was better.
Yeah, hopefully. I actually signed up for a comic book convention in May, like towards the tail end of May, because I was thinking that, you know, I think over the next 2 or 3 months, you know, the vaccines are going to be getting out there. I was thinking that I think that things are going to start to calm down, like around May. But then I found out earlier today that they postponed this convention again.
Yeah. There's been a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was a pretty safe bet, signing up for a comic book convention in May. But, I mean, how many times have we said that over the last 11 months? Like, you know, this quarantine's got to be over by July.
Yeah,
man, this quarantine's got to be over by September. It's got to be over by November. Nope.
Well, to give you an idea, here in Toronto, slash in Canada in general, their goal for the vaccines is to be able to give everybody vaccinated by September for everybody who wants to get it. So they're doing it in steps and stages and doing it in different levels and stuff.
Did you say September?
September, yes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So this is the Canadian government has purchased or made acquisitions for probably about triple the amount of vaccines we actually need for the entire population. The idea being is that some of those then afterwards that don't get needed for Canadian population will go to other countries or whatever that need it and can't afford to buy it on their own, which helps the worldwide immunization thing going right through. But the idea being is, yeah, we're doing this in steps. I was like, okay, that's great. I like a measured approach, but when the hell do I get a vaccine? Because I don't want to get this stupid thing.
Yeah. I keep saying, you know, when it comes to like most essential workers, like medical people are like way at the very top.
Absolutely. And
I think graphic designers are number like 3,456 as far as like most essential. But yeah, my parents got the first shot.
Okay, so one of the Moderna or Pfizer.
Honestly, I don't have an answer to that.
No, I just mean one of those two.
Right. They got the first shot, and I guess the first of two, but of course they're elderly, so they're higher up in the hierarchy.
Yeah, no, I like the way the Canadian government is approaching that, is that seeing as how the majority of fatalities occurred in the elderly populations, in old folks' homes and whatever, let's get them all immunized first. That way, the death toll goes down.
I'm going to tell you something. Canadians do everything smarter than Americans.
I wouldn't say that's totally the case, but I think we try to be more sympathetic. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's just the grass is always greener on the other side. But, like, I mean, just looking at how everything shakes down there, usually, it seems like... Like, I scratch my head, like, why can't we be this organized?
Well, if you want to look at organized, look at Israel. Israel's the worldwide leader right now in immunizing its population. They have, I don't know, they're immunizing like a million people a week or two, and we're still not even hit our first 1 million people being vaccinated yet.
Wow.
Yeah. And in the U.S., I believe they've hit in excess of a million vaccinations. But then we also got to look at the differences in population. I mean, Canada has about a 37 million people population, and the U.S. has like a 337 million people population.
True.
So there's discrepancies in scale there, but it's still, there are some major differences. In Canada, we don't make any of the vaccines ourselves, but in the U.S. you have at least a place or two that is making some. So as long as they can pump production into it, they can push out vaccines.
Right. People didn't turn in for vaccine talk. How do we get on that topic anyways?
I don't know. Oh, I know why. We were talking about conventions and mass organization type stuff.
Right.
So yeah. I get it. This was actually one of the questions I did want to talk about is during this whole COVID period of time, how do you sell your product? I mean, Kickstarter is obviously the one good thing. After Kickstarter, how do you keep selling it?
Oh, you mean, I thought you meant how do I attract people to the Kickstarter? You mean after the Kickstarter is over?
Yep.
So I have a few comic book stores in Pittsburgh who are going to stock it. They've had some luck with some of the anthologies that I've done, which is good. So I do some of that on consignment. If it's like a store that's been around for 20 years, I don't mind selling it on consignment. I don't like selling it. If it's like a comic book store that's been around for a year, I don't know about that, but, I have a few comic book stores here in Pittsburgh. It is going to go up on Amazon. I haven't tried tackling the beast that you were talking about earlier, known as Diamond Publishing or Diamond Distributor.
Yeah.
I don't know. maybe that's something that I'll worry about later down the line. I know from talking to other independent comic book creators, that's a nightmare.
Yep.
I am going to put Beowulf on Indiegogo after I get done with the Kickstarter. I don't know how that's going to go. I've heard people say, you know, you really have to fight tooth and nail for every sale on Indiegogo. They just don't have the number of people using it that Kickstarter does.
Right. And that makes sense. I mean, Kickstarter has got a larger percentage capture share or whatever of that particular audience.
For a hot second, I was thinking about putting Beowulf on Indiegogo instead of Kickstarter, just because I do like the fact that they have no minimums.
Mm-hmm.
But I basically changed my mind when I started it. I did like an informal survey of people who aren't, you know, diehard indie comic book people. And the number one answer I got was, what the hell's an Indiegogo? So I was like, I'm still going to put it up on Indiegogo. I'm not going to promote it as much. I'm going to spend, like I said, I'm trying to put out the Beowulf issues bi-monthly. So what I was thinking was, I'll do a month Kickstarter, a month Indiegogo, a month, and then like issue two will go on Kickstarter, you know, kind of like back and forth like that.
Right. So you're going to put one issue up on Kickstarter, then one issue up on Indiegogo, or put it up for 1 month on the one and then put it up for the next month on the other?
From what I understand, Kickstarter frowns on you doing a Kickstarter and an Indiegogo simultaneously.
Right.
So I think I'm going to like kind of like, you know, back and forth, like do a Kickstarter, then do the Indiegogo, then do the Kickstarter.
Okay. And like, are you going to do every issue like that?
Yeah. I mean, cool. Who knows? I might sell 3 copies on Indiegogo and just decide that it's not worth it. But
given, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm curious to see how it'll do on Indiegogo.
Well, like you said, I've heard pretty much the same sort of mixed response on it, because when I think of crowdsourcing for stuff, I never think of Indiegogo anymore. I know it's there. I kind of sometimes think it's disappeared because I never hear about it. But then it's like, yeah, Kickstarter. Everybody does Kickstarter or whatever.
Right.
Have you ever considered doing a Patreon or whatever the hell it's called?
I've talked to a few people. I've seen more and more comic book creators doing that.
Right.
I don't know. What I've seen, the thing that's kind of turned me off to it is that it's predominantly digital.
I don't know. Yes, it's exclusively digital.
Yeah, I'm old school. I like having a comic book in my hand.
But you don't have to convert me. I already have many.
Yeah. You already have many digital?
No, many comics.
Right.
I have no digital comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I only have physical print comics. I don't read comics unless I can have it in my hand.
The only digital comic books that I have are the ones that are kind of hard to find physically.
I'm a patient person. I'll eventually get every comic I ever want.
Fair enough.
Except for things like, I'm not going to pick up Amazing Spider-Man 14 or whatever, Amazing Fantasy 15 or whatever. It's not my shtick, but whatever.
I was going to say, I wonder what was in Amazing Fantasy 14. Nobody ever talks about that.
Exactly. And what about Amazing Fantasy 1?
Maybe Amazing Fantasy 14 is a really great story that just nobody's ever heard of because it was so overshadowed by Amazing Fantasy 15.
Exactly. I mean, anything that Kirby did, I would actually buy without actually wasting time thinking about it, because I love his stuff.
Everything he did, it had some type of heart to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, looking at any of his artwork for like the Eternals and the fourth, the DC's fourth world or whatever, the amount of pipes that he draws in this stuff is like, where does that pipe go to? If you actually follow it, it goes somewhere.
Did you ever hear the interview with Marv Wolfman? I think it was Marv Wolfman, so that he got the chance to sit and watch Jack Kirby draw one time.
No, I didn't hear it.
You know, he didn't plan out any of those drawings before he sat down.
That I had heard.
It just...
He had an idea in his head, and then he drew it.
Supposedly, like, when he looked at the blank page, he could kind of see how it was supposed to look. But yeah, I mean, how do you do something that complicated without planning it out like that?
And I would be the same way. I would plan it. I would want to say, it's going to look like this. It's going to do this. I'm going to have a bunch of this and a bunch of that. And then it's like, oh, okay. I can't draw worth shit, so I don't even whatever. But that's how I think about when I'm writing a story. I want to have an arc. I want to have main ideas. I want to do things. And then as I get through and fill them out, that's how it gets gone.
Right.
There is another question in the chat room. Would it be easier to drop into the hands of highly popular people like Kevin Smith, etc., for your book to try and help get it moving forward?
Yeah. I mean, we've tried to do that a little bit on Twitter, like just tweeting more famous people. We haven't had a lot of success with that. Is he saying maybe just straight up send him a copy of the comic book? Maybe.
I believe she's just trying to say something about how to get more effective marketing on it. And I know that there's a whole bunch of YouTubers and what they call influencers that are out there. And I was like, okay, that's one way, but
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
I actually have done quite a bit of that, sending the PDF out to various YouTube channels, various podcasts. But I think that's kind of how you and I met.
Yeah, I think I just saw a random thing on it. It's like, hey, how's it going? And then we just started talking.
Right. And I feel like this is all a numbers game. You know what I mean? Like, being that this is, you know, a first-time comic book creator, probably, like, one out of every 10 podcasts I message, it's probably closer to 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 6 will respond. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, in the same way, you know, when I'm talking to people on Instagram and I say, oh, by the way, you know, I've got this comic book out. You might want to check it out. You know, 1 out of every 7, maybe 1 out of every 8 people will check it out. So yeah, it's just a numbers game, seeing how many people you can get the comic book in front of.
When I used to go to the Horror Realm conventions, we had this bit of a running joke. Hey, I have a horror book out. Read my book. I got a book. Buy my book. And that was going to the thing that we kept saying. It's like, you know what? That annoys the shit out of me when people do it. So I don't do that. I say, hi, how you doing? Strike up a conversation and wait for it to come into a play. It's like, hey, by the way, I wrote a book. Would you be interested?
Exactly. And that's kind of what I do on Instagram as well. Like, I try to look and see, you know, what whoever it is that I'm talking about is into. Like, oh, you know, you posted this drawing of a dragon the other day. And I mentioned I have a comic book out now that has a dragon in it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I mean, the whole social media thing is all about creating content. And the more content you create and the more stuff you put out there, and more people say, hey, I actually like that. And then it is a numbers game. And this is the thing that I sometimes talk about on Facebook and whatever, saying, in order, the way that they've designed their platform is with the algorithm, and it's all about density. The more friends you have on Facebook, the more exposure you have. And the more exposure you have, that means more people are likely to see you. Like somebody just said in the chat room, buy my book. It's funny. And this is the thing. There's a number of people that I follow online that I think do this awesomely. I'm trying to remember the one guy's name right now, and it's killing me that I can't remember his name. But what he does is he talks about stuff, and just in general, he doesn't talk about his book all the time. He just talks about stuff. And then by doing that, it's giving people a sense of closer connection. and they can actually ask questions, and he'll answer things. And he's actually really good at this. And he's a top-ranked author right now. He's in that 5% that book companies actually give him money to go do book tours and stuff.
Yeah.
Mayberry, that's it. Jonathan Mayberry. Couldn't believe I could forget his name.
I'll check him out.
Yeah, he's actually a good guy to follow because he's always very involved. And he's one of those guys that actually makes an effort to try and be a good person as well as being an artist. Well, he's a writer, but artistic in the craft of creating stuff.
Yeah, I knew what you mean. You meant. Yeah, so unfortunately, I think the marketing end of things is probably the weakest link in my chain right now. And it's interesting to me now, you know, guys like Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, of course, didn't have to worry about this.
That is correct.
But on the other hand, you know, if Kickstarter had existed when they were alive, they would probably own Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and stuff like that. So it's a double-edged sword in that, we have to learn how to do all this stuff, social media marketing, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I especially hate Twitter. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about Twitter that people, when they get on Twitter, just lose their freaking mind. Like, you wouldn't think that there was that big of a difference between the social media platforms, but it really just seems to me like you get on Twitter and people just want to fight with you.
I'm lucky. I've never had that problem.
The point I was trying to make is, you know, it's kind of weird that I've kind of ignored social media my entire life. And now at like age 40, I'm trying to figure it out. But the one thing I said to myself is, you know, this is the direction that the world is moving in, and it's a fool's errand to, you can't have the attitude that the world is going to change to accommodate me. You know, you have to just accept that this is the world we live in now. Having a social media presence is part of being creative. And like I said, I don't want to make it sound like it's all negative. I have met some really cool people on social media, like you, for instance.
Yep. Oh, I've met people that I would never even given a second thought. It's like I would actually asked me. It's like, hey, we actually talk like friends.
Yeah, it's nice.
But in that vein, I tend to agree with you that most artists, most writers or whatever, people who actually craft tend not to be too clued in on how to do social media, how to do marketing. And they tend to shy away from it a lot because it's like, I don't understand it. I don't want to deal with it.
Well, and I think also there's kind of a psychological component in that people who are good at marketing don't want to talk about marketing.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to admit that the reason why their comic book is popular is because of the marketing.
Yeah.
They want to go through it thinking, oh, my comic book is popular because it's the greatest comic book ever. So, and that's something else that's been a frustration of mine. Like, it's not the easiest thing in the world to learn how to do social media marketing.
Yep.
I mean,
it's easy to start and impossible, or it's hard to stay committed to it.
Yeah, I mean, I graduated from college in, 2007. So I think the art or the science of social media marketing was just kind of in its infancy at that point. So maybe if I had graduated like 2 or 3 years later, they would have had a talk with us about like, you need to have a social media presence, but they did not.
I think that regardless of when somebody starts into it, it evolves. Like Facebook now, as opposed to 10 years ago, not the same beast. A lot of similarities, but it's evolved. Same thing with all the other social media. I mean, I originally started on MySpace. And MySpace was like, hey, look, this is fun, blah. And then, oh, we're boring. Let's go to Facebook. And then there'll be another thing, and then another thing, and another thing. And it will continuously always evolve.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They've been saying that Facebook is going to go away for like the last probably close to 5 or 6 years now. But it seems to like just keep sticking in there.
It's not going to go away. But in the same vein, MySpace is also not gone. It's become a different kind of space.
Right.
But that's what happens. Social media evolves. Like everything in the human condition, it evolves or it dies. And in that vein, speaking of, tell us where they can find you online, because we are about getting ready to wrap up the show. So where can they find you on Facebook, on Twitter, on your own web pages? Throw some statistical things out.
I believe I'm the only person on Facebook with the name Grant Lankard.
You are, because that's how I found you on Facebook.
Okay. I think if you just type Grant Lankard into Facebook, that should come up. On Instagram and Twitter, I have the same name. It's at GW Lankard, spelled L-A-N-K-A-R-D. If you look for my Kickstarter, Beowulf, if you type in Beowulf and then go to comic books and click on like the little thing that says comic books, it should come up. And then if you want to check out a free sample of Beowulf, you can go to monarchpublishing.net.
Now, in the name Monarch, did you come up with that name before the Godzilla movies came out or after?
You know what? I came up with Monarch. I'm trying to find. That was what I called my comic book publisher when I was a kid.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'm trying to find. I have a comic book from when I was a kid here, and it has like the little crown on it. I've changed the logo since then. I don't know where I came up with Monarch as a kid.
Butterflies?
I don't know. Maybe I just liked the fact that it kind of sounded like Marvel. I don't know.
Oh, okay. No, I just thought it was funny. It's like the first time I saw the name of your company, I was like, what do you say, Godzilla? It was just amazing.
I wasn't thinking about that.
I would have been surprised if it was. So in that vein, Grant, thank you very much for coming on the show. Appreciate it. It's been a very good chat.
Yeah, thank you so much, Will. This was nice. We should do this again sometime.
I am always open to have people coming back. It's always fun. Can find out what did you do? Aha! Oh, ha, 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 that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have 5 more issues, at least in this arc, so that gives us 5 more opportunities, right?
Excellent. And everybody out there in After Rot Land, I thank you all for coming and listening to my voice and the voices of people I bring on. Have fun, be well, do those fun things that are important in life and whatever. Be amazing, be awesome. Be whatever works, and have yourselves an amazing time as I find where my spot board goes to do that song.